Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hi, friends. It's me.
And Brian Brushwood.
I'd tell you I wasn't here, but I'm too honest for that.
That's what we call him, Brian Honest
Brian.
Brushwood.
He'll tell you if he's really here.
That's my entire platform. I'm going to go for president. That's the one thing. A lot of people up here on this platform, they'll tell you anything. I'm only going to tell you one thing. I'm here.
It's the Descartes platform.
That's right.
Boys and girls, let's jump right into a question. All right, and this is going to be for Brian. Maybe a scenario, Brian. Would you like a scenario?
Yeah, man. I feel like we got off that scenario train. I'm ready to get back. Now that finally SpaceX has taken over the world, we can get back to the real questions that matter.
Right. So, Brian, imagine that you go get some 23andMe kits to do DNA testing for the family, and you want to surprise them with a family tree, right?
Which, by the way, I guess nowadays 23andMe can't make any specific claims about how likely you are to get different diseases. They have to be entirely we're not giving medical advice. We're just, you know, we're just telling you about your ancestry.
No, actually, they've come to some agreements with the FDA, so that's changed a little bit. But anyhow, they can do a little bit more, but they've trying to work with the FDA to give you some more helpful information. But you get the kits, you go around and you swab Bonnie. You have what, 8 children now?
Yep.
All right. You swab, let's say 3 of the kids. You give them all little swabs, put them in the little container, seal it back up, send it off to the labs, and then a couple weeks later, you
kinda
get some envelopes in the mail.
Kind of want to do this
are
right
here. Now, Bonnie and your children are off on a trip, and you're like, huh? Well, you know, let's go take a look here. Let's go take a look at their little DNA profiles. Let's see what we have, what we inherited, where we come from. And you pull up your profile, you find out your quarter Cherokee, as we predicted. You find out, you know, Bonnie's ancestry, and then you look at the oldest one, Juniper. You know, she's like, you know, both traits really strong, and then Cadence, the second one, and then who's the youngest one?
Tripoli.
Okay, yeah. Tripoli, and you pull up Tripoli. Oh, this is interesting. It's just Northern European, but no Brian traits and no Bonnie traits at all.
Now, when you say no Brian traits, you mean like by the numbers, this is a Bonnie and.
No, I didn't. Oh, notice I said no Bonnie or Brian or Bonnie, but you immediately assumed that she'd been stepping out on you. Interesting.
She said no. Oh, so no Brian or Bonnie traits.
No
at
Brian
all?
Or Bonnie.
Oh, no, geez. Even in a gigantic scientific anomaly, it has to be slut shaming.
I mean, no. I mean, the reason is because we've talked before about the existence of chimeras. There are mothers.
Nope, neither you nor Bonnie.
Okay, right. That's. Okay, now we're getting to it. We're talking about a medical mix-up as a kid, a baby swap?
That would be the likely explanation.
Can I tell you when I know that they go through an extraordinary amount of double-checking and protecting everything. They make sure to put on wristbands and they take blood the moment the baby's born right there when it's in front of you. On my third daughter, I remember thinking like, man, they just all look the same as babies, don't they? And then I went to go visit in the lineup of other babies, and I realized they don't all look the same. Just all my children look exactly the same because there's something about my Frankenstein-like brow that is very prominent on all three of our infant children. And it was like – it was amazing because you worry about a mix-up, and then I walked up and down, and I was just like, no need for a DNA test. I'm pretty sure we got the right animal here.
But you don't in this situation. You're looking at the results, and you see clearly that Tripoli is not your child.
So the other two are. The other two have
other two are.
I mean, first of all, there has to be precedence from history of exactly this, where maybe maybe one person, if not the other party, knows that that this is not the child. I think I would do what all of them have done, which is I'd shut my mouth for the rest of my life. I'd burn the results. I mean, what's there to be gained?
So you wouldn't tell Bonnie?
I don't think I would. Because it's Bonnie who would take it harder than me.
Wow, that's a big call, though. And I don't criticize you for making it, because you of the only the three people that are on here know the politics of not only husband wife, but also, you know, mother father. Like, but that's huge, right? Like to keep that from her.
Now let me put it this way. I'm not gonna say I wouldn't tell her forever, but I would press pause while I could do a little bit of research, maybe hire a private investigator, do some poking around if I can.
All right, here. My name is Guy Findthings. I am a private investigator here in Austin, Texas, of the Colombian Findthings. Anyway, what do you want me to find?
Listen, there's a kid that we thought it was our own. We thought we had it downtown, you know, somewhere around 34th Street. Maybe a little switcheroo happened. Any chance you could find out, like, what other kids were born around the same time? And if any of them maybe have, you know, checked out 23andMe and maybe are our biological child? And then, so here's the worst part, right?
Yeah.
Is I would wait to tell Bonnie based on the results, because if the results come back, they're all like, well, there's only one other kid that it could possibly be, and a meteor smashed into their ambulance on the way home. Oh, they're geez. All dead.
Well, Brian, that's the second part I want to get to. So you've established that you would not tell Bonnie.
I mean, I would get around to telling Bonnie. I just don't know that I'd kick in the door right now.
Anyway, I'm your private investigator, Guy Findthings. Turns out I'm going to need to take a little sabbatical on this. I'm going to be gone for another 12 years. But don't worry. Thorough finding of things takes some time. The truth is worth waiting. See you later.
Well, I guess, so... You say eventually you get around to telling Bonnie, but that's the thing, is the question is going to be in your mind is first it's going to, because you're thinking, you think, oh, not my child, but this child is clearly my child. Then you'll start to think, wait, I do have another child out there.
Well, and plus, here's the weird thing. At what age, let's say you're at 4 years old or you know, Calliope is 3 years old, three and a half now. I would say that if I just met another family in Austin that showed up and we're like, hi, we just found out definitively that that's our baby and we have your baby. They're real different. And, you know, personalities are really different or whatever. Like, and they say, we don't really care one way or the other. We're just glad both of these little girls are healthy. Do you want to trade back or are you happy with the one you got? I got to tell you, I think I might be all like, I'm fine. I like Callie a lot.
But Brian, you have to say that you don't want to trade. For Christ's sake.
But, all right, here, Brian, your phone's ringing.
Ring. Hang on. Sorry. Hello, this is Brian.
Hey, it's me, Guy Findthing. Anyway, I'm here in Mexico. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm pretty wasted. But I was just thinking that you still haven't told your wife, right?
I've talked about it in the hypothetical, but no, I mean, is there something I should share with her?
No, I was just thinking, kind of really weird if, like, your biological kid's out there and needs a specific blood type or an organ or something like that, and you're not around to do it. That's a real effed up situation. Anyway, check, please. I'll talk to you later. I'm still on the case.
Guy Findthings.
Would you hire Guy Findsworth things to find your other child?
Yeah, I guess I would.
All right. Have you told Bonnie yet, or are you trying to do this before you tell Bonnie?
No, at this point, once it occurs to me that there's a biological reason that I should track down my offspring so that I could be available for genetic contributions and stuff, yes, yeah, absolutely. Bonnie's full in on that.
All right. What if you find out this child?
By the way, time out. That smile and nod is what happens right before the jaws snap shut. And I hear checkmate from over my shoulder.
Exactly. No. I'm trying to imagine that Guy Finesworth, could you find Bonnie and put Bonnie on the phone? Because I want to hear this conversation where Brian tells her, one, that he knows this, two, how long he's known this, and then explains the conditions their real child is living in.
Let me try. Okay, well, what conditions is my real child in?
Poor, father's in jail, mother is a stripper dating a pilot who died testing alien spacecraft.
You're describing the plot to Independence Day.
Maybe.
All right.
Oh, my God. If this is deep marketing, I'm going to be so...
I'm going to see if I can call Bonnie. I think she's actually at one of our children's recitals.
Oh, God. He's actually going to get his wife on
the phone. First, you're getting a call. Hey, it's me, Guy Finethings. Turns out I found your kid. The father's in jail. The mother's a stripper that is dating a pilot who just died literally seconds ago. I'm here. I'm looking at his corpse. Tasting an alien spacecraft. I said tasting, not testing. It got really weird. It started as a test. It ended as a taste. Bada bing, bang, boom. Boyfriend's dead. Kids are out. I'll bill ya. Find things out.
Turns out there's two major brands of spacecraft, and they want to know which one tastes better. And so he participated in the alien spacecraft tasting.
The state name for heroin. Here in Columbia, South Carolina.
Yeah. All right. I'm just going to give a little call to Bonnie. We'll just see. What's the exact question?
The exact question is, how are you going to broach the whole, hey, our child's not our child?
Hey, Bon. Bonnie, are you live at an event?
Live at an event?
Wait, is this Josie?
Weird.
Josie, how did you answer the phone?
No, this is my phone.
No, I called your mom.
No, you're on my phone.
Okay, listen, Josie, I'm just going to have to ask you, kiddo. I want you to imagine that we found out that one of your sisters is not actually your sister. And in fact, we accidentally took home the wrong baby. And we found out that your actual sister is somewhere else. Should we tell Mom?
Yes.
Well, what did we tell her?
You got the wrong baby.
Okay, but let's say it's Penny. You're just going to tell Penny, get out of here?
I'd say, shoo! Skedaddle!
Skedaddle. All right. Thank you, sweetheart. Bye.
Yeah, I was going to say, at their ages, that might be a feature, not a bug.
Shoo! Shoo! Skedaddle!
Brian leaves the results on the table and he walks upstairs and Josie's already packing Calliope's
things. Oh, no, he said... he said Penny.
Yeah.
In one political move, middle child becomes the most tenured daughter in the household. That is like some House of Cards level maneuvering.
All right, tell me this actually happened. Tell me there's some historical basis for this.
I mean, there's a lot of historical basis for this, Brian. I mean, And it's one of the things that's happening, more and more. And it's, more of just sort of a theoretical question is that one of the things that we used to talk a lot is the whole idea of the ethical implications of what happens when you're dealing with these situations. As we start dealing with cloning, doing that. But you looked at, you look at for news, items unswitched at birth, and you find out there are a lot of these situations, and it still happens. And there was an article in Chicago Tribune that came out just a couple weeks ago that talked about that it's happened, it's some of these things that just, still happens and not, a number of times. And you're also getting too is that as we're doing more in vitro fertilization, mix-ups occur in clinics. You know,
oh my gosh, you're talking about like before anybody's even born, before the embryo is even implanted. You know, sample 27-2AB is replaced with sample 27-alpha-7-3.
Well, I mean, you have to figure that these are offices like anything else that have mix-ups, right? That have mistakes, clerical errors. But this is like this feels like the every conspiracy movie, every spy movie ever, where the intrepid reporter has to figure out, or a member of the cabinet has to figure out why everybody's covering something up, and it's because a mistake was made that is too important to go back on. Like, and that's got to happen all the time, right?
So here's an example of two French families whose babies were switched at birth at 20 decide to remain estranged after a heartbreaking reunion.
Oh, this is what I was afraid of. Talk me through it.
According to interviews at the time, the babies had been switched at birth by a drunk nurse who was suffering from depression.
Oh.
Now, understand, like today, they go through, have all sorts of protocols to prevent this from happening, right?
Sure.
You know, and so it's, yeah, I mean, it's just, they, at some point, I don't know when the reunion tried to happen, but it just did not work. Anyhow, let me just pull that up and read it. So it's not.
So what happened? They went to go reunite, and they were like, "Wow, I deeply dislike you, and I'm not happy that we're related."
Basically. So I mean, it happened. I mean, a medical sort of acts, you know, switches because one girl had jaundice, whatever. But anyhow, the girls were put together in one incubator, and then you know they separated. There was a lawsuit. Money was exchanged. And then, you know, trying to meet with the sort of the birth mothers and all that didn't work very well. But, you know, point is that.
Well, I mean, I guess that's the problem is that in the hypothetical, you may encounter when you picture the other family, whatever the other family is, you picture them as versions of yourself. The reality, of course, is that you encounter very different people.
Yeah. And like in this case was like this one woman, you know, she refuses to see her biological child because she's happy with the child she has. She's like, well, you know, worked out well enough. I'm happy. And I don't want to maybe, you know, it's a difficult situation because you don't want to create a bond with, you know, somebody else later on. And so anyhow, this was on a TLC program.
I mean, in the perfect version is, you know, you establish a deeper community bond between the two families, but you can't necessarily decide that.
No, you cannot.
That's heartbreaking though. I mean, like, especially because there's so much that goes into it that even like taking a meeting with a biological family, although understood probably by all parties rationally, is still ultimately going to kind of look like some level of rejection, right?
Yep. Speaking of rejection and not wanting to have us be separated.
Yeah. Hey, if you want to not make an accidental separation of this show from happening, then you can go ahead and head on over to patreon.com.
I mean, you know, Justin, let's not whitewash this. Let's talk to the people directly and treat them like adults.
And treat them right.
As of today, I don't think we've ever announced this on the show. I know some people had thought otherwise, but we can firmly say that Andrew Main, Justin Young, Brian Brushwood,
yeah,
all three of us are not genetically related. We are not biologically related. We're not family members. It turns out we are torn asunder in three different tribes, and the only thing that brings us together every Sunday is your affection and your love. People say, how can you make your affection felt? Well, turns out there's a website, patreon.com. Patreon, from the Greek patrios, which means showing your love.
Through money.
And weird things.
Through weird things.
Latin word things, wherein three men engage in a combat of the mind. Listen, folks, it doesn't take Guy Find Things to direct you right where you need to go. Patreon.com/weirdthings.
Absolutely. Throw us whatever you think the show's worth.
Also, go look at that video where my beard is clearly far larger than my forehead, and it looks really odd.
Okay, you're looking at, if I was squinting, one third of your face is hat, one third of your face is flesh, and one third of your face is beard.
It's a very weird, like, if you turned my face upside down, it would look like Kramer.
Except for that part that you lean back. Then it was like all beard. That was crazy.
Then it comes at you. And luckily, we're not in 3D.
Gentlemen, I got more.
Heck yeah. Let's dive in, man.
It's not good, guys. It's not good.
What do you mean? How bad can it be? That's our tagline for Weird Things.
Brian, if I were to ask you how many BFFs do you have, how many best friends do you have, what would the answer be?
Two, three, if you want to include my wife. Four, if you want to include our producer, Bryce. Five, if you want to include Tom Merritt. Say, maybe six, seven, eight. I have eight.
Sub 10.
We count my kids? My kids?
I mean like best friend. Like, we don't have to include family.
Oh. Then none. I'm my own man.
What?
No. I would say
that was an audible what from Bryce the producer.
I'm gonna say like there's family aside, I'd say there's seven people that I truly feel like are all my besties.
Justin? And I know I'm your BFFF.
Of course. Yeah. I probably got, oh, gee, there's Guy Fine Things.
Image of Justin with a deerskin hat and a cigar.
I don't know, a tight five? I would say probably a fiver.
A tight five.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, researchers, including Robin Dunbar, who we know came up with a Dunbar number explaining like how many kind of relationships you can have, said they've done the crunch of the numbers. They've looked at it, figured out, you know, what the realistic number is that people actually have for the total number of BFFs that you can have. And anybody over this number is just a dirty liar.
Damn it.
Probably isn't close. Maybe a sociopath. This is going to be my letter to the editor assessment.
It's certainly not projecting.
No, no, not at all. Anybody want to guess what that number is?
Probably two.
Anybody else?
What does she describe as best friend? What is best friend?
Robin's a he, but...
What does he describe?
It's a group of researchers, actually, but they would just say that, you know, these are people you spend the... Like, if you looked at, like, how people you talk to the most, and you put, like, who do you choose to talk to or whatever, and, like... Who really stands out on that graph? How many really, really? Because they're like, oh, yeah, my best friend. When's the last time you hung out with them or talked to them?
That does change things. And, man, it's tough to make that a personal thing because, you know, we have these podcasts where we, you know, decide to see each other once a week. So it's like, you know, you're in the group, Justin. You're in the group, Andrew.
I'm just in a group now, Brian. Thank you.
Well, I mean, you're one of the BFFs. You're in the BFF club. What club would you be in?
I would say that oddly, or maybe not oddly, the fact that we do this show, that we have this time where we are always talking to each other in front of people, leads me to talk to you guys more, you know?
That's right. The only reason you talk to us?
No.
Brian, are you hearing
I'm saying it's, that it's, more so than other people that I would like to keep in touch with that I don't keep in touch with.
Right. For example.
People he likes more than us, Brian? Are you hearing this?
Okay. So, for example, you are
rapidly talking your way out of my file.
Oh, is that how easy it is?
So, you guys are familiar with the incredible magician Nate Staniforth, who I've known for over a decade now. We were represented by the same folks in the college market. I've watched him go on to host Discovery Television shows. He's now doing a tour across the United States, and he's in this weird clubhouse where maybe once every 3 weeks, either I'll call him or he'll call me, and it's as though no matter where either one of us are, it's pretty much we know the next 90 minutes are going to be spent dropping everything and getting caught up with each other. You know, I consider him one of my best friends in all of magic. But if you define best friendship as the amount of time that you spend with someone, that certainly alters it, especially if you're talking about physical proximity as opposed to, you know, emotional communicative proximity. Because for an awful long time, the first, 5 years of my friendship with both of you guys, I saw you in person maybe seven times.
Yeah.
So I will say, in if we are defining it based on current contact, then I probably have two, and they're on this show. I probably talk to the two of you guys more than anyone else on a regular basis. So I would say that there are other people for whom I can catch up with really, really quickly, and that there is an emotional intimacy. But if we are judging it by constant contact, I would say two.
Yeah. All right. I'm on the same page.
Wait, Bryce and Brian, or me and Bryce? Okay. What they did is they grouped this, and the number they came up with, they said they started the Dunbar number, and it's 150 people. It's a number of people you can have kind of the meaningful relationships with. And some people can do more than that. Master networkers, people who are exceptionally contacts. A lot of people are really successful in business and politics often are incredible networkers who can keep track of multiple people. I walk into a party, and if there are three people there, I'm lucky if I can remember one name, and that's my own. But they take that 150 sort of the median, 150 people is the average number of people that we can have casual conversations with, feel pretty relaxed with on a regular basis. Breaking that down, they said there are five of those people make up your closest friends. Five of those people make up your closest friends, followed by 10 for the next layer. 10 is the next layer, like, oh, yeah, it's cool. I hang out, talk to this person, whatever. 35 in the third level, and then 100 in the outermost.
It seems right that there are different orbits. Unfortunately, as scientific as we want to couch this whole thing, as important as it is anthropologically, I mean, at some level, we're having that that MySpace conversation is, who's in my top eight, you know?
Well, the way they did that was they would look at phone calls and look at phone call frequencies, you know? So it's an interesting way to do that. And by the way, I got to meet the guy last night who created the MySpace worm that made everybody follow him.
Oh, wait, who is that?
Sammy. It was this weird party where you meet everybody by their first name and then you totally forget their last name. I'll give you
Sammy JS Space Hero.
Yes.
By Sammy Kamkar.
Yes, that's Sammy Kamkar. So, you know, he created the worm that made everybody follow him and he got arrested.
How did he get arrested?
Because he created a worm that infected the MySpace servers.
I mean,
the fastest spreading virus of all time.
Hmm.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, dude, hit with a felony charge.
Yeah, I mean, sure, let's put him in a cage with rapists. That makes sense.
He was the guy that I don't think he actually was in a cage with rapists, unless it was probation. A voluntary thing. But he also, which I don't think it would be, he was also the one that figured out that like how Visa and all the other ones were using RFID to track us. He's found a number of exploits and stuff that even ties into the Snowden stuff. So, he's a board of directors, Brave New Software nonprofit that helps look for, you know, different kinds of exploits and hacks and to try to go after oppressive regimes and things like that, you know, show if you're being monitored. So, neat guy. But anyhow,
but also a terrible criminal. Shame on him.
It's event that, you know, the White House chief of technology, you know, was having great conversation with him because he's like, we need to figure out how to use this guy's knowledge base to help our country and help the world. So, you know, he's a very interesting guy. But anyhow, he was the one that found out that the PHP pseudo-random number generator was like very predictable. And that was like made it available for PhD, you know, hacking, which he actually created a patch for. So he's a very good white hat hacker now. Very, very good. He would be the Avengers. Right. Anyhow, gentlemen. One more topic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we get a lot of grief sometimes from a small, small segment of this audience that gets frustrated at how much we talk about Elon Musk and SpaceX. But it's
yeah,
like,
by the way, and I don't feel bad about outing where that criticism comes from. Elon Musk, face it, you're a hell of a guy, and we're going to talk about you. So stop responding with all these critical emails, all right?
Yeah. Guys, please just let me work in quiet. SpaceX made an announcement this week. Pretty big, bold announcement here. Brian, you saw this, right?
I don't think I did. Maybe.
SpaceX said 2018, right? 2018. If you go get a two-year calendar later this year, it'll have 2018 on there. We can talk about Defiance 2018 and what Star Wars films and Marvel movies are going to come out there. Well, SpaceX is going to take a Falcon rocket, a Falcon Heavy rocket, and they're going to send one of their Dragon spacecraft to Mars.
Okay. It'll be
the largest thing to ever land on Mars. It's going to have to, it's going to do retro rockets to land on the surface of Mars. It's going to weigh something like 9,000 pounds. We don't know what equipments are in there. By the way, we don't know if this mission's supposed to be in it, but this rocket is actually capable, the capsule's actually capable of taking off from Mars too and doing a payload return to Earth called a mission called Red Dragon.
So what do you think their best bet is? Do you put do you send a message about the colonization of Mars by sending one-way goods that will be valuable to future missions? Do you send a rover that sounds like every other, you know, NASA mission to go get samples or whatever?
You send science. You don't waste it to send some, you know, Amazon Prime granola bars that, you know.
No. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is imagine, you know, you send something over there and it pops open and a pop tent comes out and it starts growing algae in there. Like that would be astonishingly valuable.
Have experiments for colonization of Mars. It'll absolutely have research and experiments to figure out how they want to colonize and what they want to do there. It's definitely going to have that kind of stuff. What it's going to be yet, we don't know. They're still probably determining that, but they're going to send, and that the capsule that's going to land on Mars is the same, you know, sized one that they'll be using to put astronauts on the International Space Station. Theoretically, if you could fit inside of there and fit your food and all of everything to recycle what you need, it would be a human capable craft. It'd be ridiculously small space and take forever. But the point is, this is the largest payload we've ever sent to Mars, be the largest thing to ever land on Mars. In 2018 is when the mission launches, which if they hit the 6-month window, it could land in like 2018.
I mean, okay, so let's say, and here's part of the reason, I know you were rolling your eyes at granola bars, but let's say that somebody was just crazy enough to plan on 10, 15 years from now landing on Mars and staying there forever. Somebody who, I don't know, maybe his stated goal is to die on Mars. It seems like 2018 would be a good time to start sending, I don't know, granola bars out if Elon Musk plans to head on out around that
time. He's going to be using, they're coming up with the next generation of heavier lift vehicles that will have far, far more cargo capacity. And if that granola bar could instead be an algae experiment, you know, to figure out what you can grow on Mars, that would be the way to do it. I mean, he's trying to build a sustainable thing on Mars. So I think... Personally, I think it'd be premature to start trying to send supplies when you want to be sending science packages to figure out what you're going to need, how you're going to live there, because he's building a whole architecture of spacecraft that we'll find out in September for colonizing Mars.
I mean, it seems – wouldn't it be great if he's like, hey, look at us, first private company to ever send anything to Mars. Crazy, right? Second time. We're going to do it. Where are we going to land? Same place as the first. I mean, it seemed pretty interesting. Still a lot more science to do there. Third, fourth, fifth, sixth time. And they're like, looks an awful lot like, are you building a city on Mars? And you're like, ha ha. Oh, I mean, we're just throwing a lot of private probes onto Mars. I mean,
I don't think he's hiding his intentions. And like I said, in September,
I think he'd be passing out real estate pamphlets. By the way, also, welcome here for our timeshare seminar.
Yeah. So what we have, it's exciting mission. So they're doing an agreement with NASA, which is what they call a non-cost technology transfer, meaning, you know, NASA's not giving them any money, and they're not giving NASA any money, but to share data about landing on Mars. So they're working, and they're trying really hard to work with, you know, NASA, and I'm sure that we're going to be finding there's going to be more announcements as far as what kind of experiments are going to go on there. If you look at, you know, the scale of what this is to figure out, you know, how to land people on Mars is a challenge. And that's clearly, they said, yes, no, this is because we want to colonize Mars and we want to start getting more research. But 2018, that's Brian. That's when your colonization begins. That's when the invasion begins.
Dude, it's happening in our lifetime. The future is delivering so hard on all the promises that I hoped when I was 8 years old. I'm so happy.
So, I guess, and this is always my fascination with this, because I'm always so interested about like the narrative and how that affects expectations and how that affects where, you know, things go and how much humanity wants to get excited or focus on it and how that affects the process itself. When does this become the biggest story on the planet? Because it has to eventually, right? If they continue, if SpaceX continues to deliver on the level that they have at the rate that they have.
The moment you transition to pilgrims, it becomes speculative, crazy, highfalutin, rich people throwing rocks.
It's the biggest thing before that, because the speculation of a mission is the biggest story in the history of humanity, right?
I think we're going to see. A couple weeks ago, I went to the Yuri's Night Party, which I mentioned, you know, at the California Science Center. These things, space stuff is getting more and more popular. More and more people are showing up to go do these things, okay? Space startups, there's more of these. When SpaceX tries to launch the Falcon Heavy, hopefully in November, which will be the largest rocket since the Saturn V, when that takes off, which may even have more thrust. I mean, they just SpaceX just, by the way, upped the amount of thrust that all the rockets have. They said, oh, we can push our engines even more. When Falcon Heavy launches, that's going to be huge. That's going to be the most, my prediction is going to be the most attended launch since probably the last shuttle launch, and may even exceed that because of just the growing awareness and excitement for SpaceX and to see something like that do that. The 2018, the first Mars launch for this. Now we have other Mars projects from NASA that have taken off that are attended, but I think for a Falcon Heavy sending, you know, it's an unmanned, but sending a large craft like this to Mars, I think it's going to be extremely a popular launch, and I think it's going to build. I think that after Musk announces the architecture for the Mars Colonial Transport, which is what they call the big fracking rocket, which is going to be a huge rocket bigger than anything ever that's taken off, which is, you know, not the Falcon Heavy, but bigger than that. When we see the first Mars Colonial Transport rocket test, which, you know, will be probably sometime in, you know, 2020 something or whatever, that's going to be insane because you're going to see this giant behemoth of a rocket, and that's when it becomes real because this rocket will look unlike anything we've ever seen before. And I think that's when people are like, oh man, no, this is a Mars rocket.
And that's, you know, and so great sword point something out that I think is really the crux of what I'm trying to get at, that like, oh, I think most people just roll their eyes and blow it off. But at some point, if we continue at this level of achievement at this pace, that changes. Like at some point, the news value becomes so great.
I hear when I worked for, you know, the James Randi and the you know, JREF, I would hear a lot of people who were into pro science people like, yeah, people hate science. People hate science. I was like, no, I think everybody likes science. I think some people don't like scientists or some of the people who the way they use it or talk about it. I think a lot of people don't like arrogance. But when it comes to science and stuff like that,
well, I think people love science. They're just often ill-informed as to what that is.
Yeah, and like, I think that, you know, you get people who are big into the F yeah science sort of thing. Like, no, that's not really science, guys. That's just putting things on your Facebook so you look smart to everybody, which I know all about.
Thank you.
I think that when I talk about rockets or space to people like that, you know, for the first 5 minutes, people are very excited, and then they drone out because, you know, I go on and on. Point is I think it's a growing thing. You know, we were, when we first started this podcast a billion years ago, we talked about SpaceX, and it was this unknown sort of startup to many people, even many of our listeners.
Yeah, you know? Even to one-third of our co-hosts. There may have been, if you go back far enough and listen to the archives, an awakening, a come-to-Jesus moment that one of at least one-third of our co-hosts have had.
Right, but once you got awareness of what's going on, and now that you have the ascendancy of Elon Musk as a public figure, and once, you know, now that they're doing, like, dude, like the excitement for when they did the barge landing and they did the land landing for that craft, because you had people who were all of a sudden going, wait, that's a thing we can do now? You know, I think it's one of these things that you wake up one day and everybody's got animated dog faces on their video, you know, they're uploading to Twitter from Snapchat. You know, you're like, where did this come from? You know?
Yeah. Do they cover, do the 24-hour cable news networks cover like SpaceX launches? Like live?
I don't think anybody, sure like that live, they, not like, that I'm aware they, of, no.
Like, I don't know. I don't know if anybody listening or watching like has watched coverage of space.
I mean, that's the problem, right? Is if there is a demand for that programming, that demand is already being met on the internet by everybody just going live, you know, on NASA TV.
And their next launch is going to be May 5th. It's the JSAT-4, which I think is that a weather satellite? A telecommunication satellite. So that is, they're probably going to be doing their video of it, probably showing what's going to be going on with that. Highly recommend, if you've never watched a SpaceX broadcast when they do a launch, it is amazing.
Slick. The production is extraordinary.
You get intelligent, very, very photogenic people talking to you who are all engineers and scientists, you know? It's a bunch of young people like, hey, guys, let's go launch a rocket, you know? And it's you know, amazing. And it's really – they've gotten so much more professional, so much more slicker. You know, they let the SpaceX people talk about it. It's not some, you know – dilettante TV host personality. Brian, Justin, I would love to go do it for them, but they don't need us. You know, they've got a great, and it's earnest.
Can you talk about your fanboy moment?
Oh yeah. So, I'm driving to SpaceX last week and, I'm talking on the phone. I'm talking to my parents I said, you know, they do great. Like they're like, when it comes to science communication, stuff like that, as we know, is a passion for me. I'm like, I said, SpaceX does a wonderful job of it. You know, in-house. I said, you know, it's funny cause you watch it and you see some dude who's like hosting it, who looks like he's some LA hired to host, you know, Entertainment Weekly show or whatever like this, you know, just a, you know, good looking dude telling you what's going on. You find out he's like a mission payload specialist or something, you know, he's an engineer. And so like, I think there's another thing you'll see him sitting at a table in a binder, you know, but he's like, he works for SpaceX. And then I go there to go meet our buddy TJ and I'm standing in the hallway and this dude comes walking along and I'm like, hey, you're great on your webcast. You know, he's like, thanks. It was fun. You know, like whatever, weirdo.
That is amazing.
I do TV too.
I'm a best-selling author. There's a conversation breaker. Yo, geez.
Security. Got another one.
Oh, that's awesome.
So yeah, they do a great job of using people working at SpaceX to go do that. And it's becoming, you know, and there's exciting stuff going on, you know, and there's a lot of other little space startups and stuff that we're probably starting to talk more about. But all the hosts. Oh my God. And by the way, have you watched the landing, the 360 degree virtual reality landing?
No, not at all. I would love to see it if they have that available.
If you go to, it's on YouTube and you can Facebook whatever you want to use. So Bryce is flipping through there, so you can pan around as if you're on the drone ship. When look up. Oh, see the little bright
great.
Light.
Oh, that's great.
And then, oh my God, where's it going?
This is the most recent one. I thought the seas were a little rougher.
You can tell there's some stabilization going.
Oh,
on.
Oh my God.
Oh. Yeah, so you're watching, you know, like a 9-story rocket come from space and land on a barge.
I mean, a little off center, let's be honest.
Yeah.
We stopped dreaming, people.
My question is, and I actually try to get, see if Elon Musk sometimes goes on Twitter and answers questions. I was trying to see if he'd answer this. Does it make sense for them to buy their own aircraft carrier?
I saw that. Yeah, that's an interesting idea. Like, at what point is it cost effective to just get
used parts?
Well, like, buy an aircraft carrier so that when you're landing your cores, instead of putting on a barge, because you have with the Falcon Heavy, you have three cores, some of them going further out than the others, but you're going to have to do like sea landings on those. And so you can do multiple barges, but if you're doing daily launches, at some point, do you just like, hey, you know, let's just put an aircraft carrier out there, land them on the aircraft carrier, put them horizontal, and then when we got like 10 of them, bring it back to port.
Man, all I'm going to say is that Elon Musk has definitely not answered that question, and I'm not going to say that there needs to be a groundswell of support of people asking why he's dodging the question, but I'm just saying, you know, if carrier gate were to become a trending topic, you know, I'm just saying.
I think, listen, there's a ton of questions that we would love to ask of Elon.
Is it out of line for us to try to put together a 20-minute interview with Elon Musk at some point? Like, we could all fly. We have Patreon funds. We could all go out to L.A. I think we could do a good little interview. Is that something we should all strive for?
Yes.
Okay.
You know, I guess the question would be, it's not like he's unavailable to media. I mean, who knows where that is, but you see
it. It's not like we're not media.
So I guess we got to put on our...
We are literally the definition of friendly media. It's something that in PR you hope to find is your friendly media sources. And we are about as friendly as you get.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll have to put on our Night Attack hats and think of a name of the campaign and see if we can't make enough noise to make that happen. That would be a blast, though.
With that, it would probably best be waged in very, very enthusiastic emails between people.
Sure.
And waiting our turn quietly.
Sure.
Or we could just, See, now I don't even want to make a joke about the hashtag or something.
It's all I'm thinking of is the hashtag. Yeah. Hashtag one-way trip.
Hashtag I don't want to make a joke about a hashtag.
Okay.
Hey, how about picks, you guys?
Hey, man, I got a pick. I got a pick for a movie that I loved the first time I watched it, and I loved it even more the second and third time I watched it, and... I had to actively trick my daughters into watching alongside with me, and man, oh man, is Edge of Tomorrow great. It's a really, really great movie. It's the best video game movie ever made, and news is they are a go for a sequel to Edge of Tomorrow. If you haven't seen it, you're in the perfect position if you don't even know what it's about. In that case, treat yourself by just watching it right now without learning a single thing about it, and trust me. But if not, then definitely go see Edge of Tomorrow. It had a surprising amount of joy and heart and a lot of ass-kicking in there. It was great.
It is such a good movie that it's one of those things where as it got closer to release, the studio, I think, got nervous about what they had, and they just bungled the marketing on it. They changed the title. I mean, the original title of the Japanese book it was based on was like Kill and Kill Again or something like that.
All you need is kill.
Yeah.
It kept changing. And it's like, it's one of these things where like, I would sometimes stumble when I'd be like, oh yeah, Edge of Tomorrow? Like what's the, like, look at the title, the post, Live, Die, Repeat, big letters. Then below that, Edge of Tomorrow. So it's like, what's the title?
I think part of that.
And then they officially renamed it Live, Die, Repeat.
I don't think they ever officially renamed it. It's just that when they did the DVD release, they put the tagline far more prominently than the technical title.
Edge of Tomorrow is not on the front.
No, it is. It says Live, Die, Repeat, and this is hashtag Edge of Tomorrow in the corner, very tiny. Because the headline was all saying they changed the title and they hadn't. See, there it is right there. Cruise Blunt, Edge of Tomorrow. If you take a look at that there, DVD, boom, who was right, Brian?
They put it after Cruise and
Blunt and Edge of Tomorrow. Yes.
Sure. Yes. I mean, that to me would represent evidence of them changing the title.
Again, but they didn't, because to change a title changes how it's listed in registries and IMDb and stuff. But the point is, I think they were trying to – they knew there was a value. They thought, how cool would it be to watch this movie not knowing what the conceit is? And if there's a chance we can have people walk into it and discover, much to their delight, the clever mechanic of this, then we should try to make it happen. And then they realized that in doing so, they weren't putting butts in seats. And so they changed it.
Yeah, I don't know how much of its success, is kind of the kind of double-edged sword of Tom Cruise right now. That, he is obviously a draw, but I think that there is a bit of a fatigue to him playing a certain kind of role that this certainly looked like from the outset. What you realize when you watch it is it's such a clever script, and having the familiarity with Tom Cruise, even, him doing a similar character to other characters, is almost necessary considering how complex the story gets. you know, and how much you are.
You need the shorthand. You need to know what he represents so that you could see within, you know, 6 seconds of this setup, be like, oh, I get it. He's this guy doing this thing.
Yeah, and he's being cocky. He's right. being sure. He's being clever. Like, it's like it helps you as you get through it because he is kind of playing a bit of a stock character that you need to learn really, really quickly who he is because how he changes is so different because of how the story unfolds. I did a whole thing with Brett where after this came out, we watched it and we were like really into it that like, there is no end to, this like Groundhog Day genre. I love like, this is sci-fi Groundhog Day, like with Bill Murray is like, a professional comedy, you know, a soft romantic comedy kind of version of it. I loved this premise. And I always love it. And I think that once a year we should get another people are repeating the same day over and over and over again so we can tell different genre stories.
But and they did it. But they did a clever thing, too, is once you get it and that world feels familiar, they didn't spend an entire act having you watch the same thing with slight differences. It was like, you got it. Moving quickly ahead, you know, this is what it's, you know, jumping into him getting the competency and stuff was great. I thought that was just, that's how they made it feel fresh. So
yeah, and there's also just great, great, great storytelling elements that without getting too much into it, you realize some characters know more than others at very interesting times. And that's what really, that's when it went from, hey, this is a clever movie to, hey, this is a really good movie.
Yeah, the movie was ahead of you and didn't let the audience get too far ahead of the characters, which is frustrating when you're waiting for them to catch up. Justin, you have a pick?
Sure. My pick is, I'm trying to think if I have a better one. You want to know what? My pick is Silicon Valley. I really like the season premiere of Silicon Valley. And I feel like in that big block they have on HBO on Sundays now with Game of Thrones, that and Veep. I'm a huge fan of Veep, but Veep this season, at least the first episode, kind of felt a little tired to me. Silicon Valley is a show that I've always felt is kind of hit or miss when it's trying to nail down something. But I feel like they've got a kind of a confidence to this first episode, and I'm excited to see kind of where they go. I very much love that cast, and I'm excited to see what happens next.
I finally caught up because I had so many people going, "Have you watched it?" And I'm like, "I watched the first season. The first episode of the second season was." It was a little uneven for me, and it's one of these things where there's so many things to watch that, and also that it was with the loss of was it Christopher Evan Welch, cast member who died after season one, and he was one of these in watching his performances. I really had this wow, this guy's great. And it was there, and the cast was there. The writers were in a very difficult position. How do you deal with that? And they have to write off Peter Gregory, but the weird way it became a joke, you know, like Peter Gregory's dead. And I was still kind of like, it was like when, you know, it was like Andy Whitfield from Spartacus when he died. You know, you're like, I don't know if I can watch the show because, you know, I like this guy. He seemed like a very charismatic person. And with this, it was sort of that first episode was sort of, it left me uneven. And understanding that what that cast and crew and writers went through, that loss that they went through, I couldn't even imagine what that was like for them. And they're trying to figure out how to deal with it. But that still being said, it was hard for me. But then I said, you know what? Everybody keeps talking about how much fun season two is. So I jumped into season two and loved it and thought it was great. So
have you seen the first episode of season three?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm very excited to see where they go. Speaking of Groundhog Day with Stephen Tobolowsky, who is someone that even if you don't know his name, you have certainly seen him in so many awesome things and is hilarious in Groundhog Day. I feel like he fits so perfectly, and he has like a very a role that I think very much fits in his comedic skill set as he kind of a lot of times sort of gets fit in as the bumbler or the buffoon, and here he plays this like crafty CEO who's been around Silicon Valley for a while and has a real track record and is just great at sort of softly manipulating people. And that is exactly where I like him as an actor. So I'm excited to see where they go.
Yeah. It's neat to see him in a bigger role like that. My pick is, I've only seen the first episode, so I can't vouch for the rest of the season. So if it's completely a disaster, I apologize. And I'm trying not to like binge watch it all at once. Daredevil season 2.
Oh, dude, I've only watched the first episode of Daredevil. And part of it is that, you know, I'm forbidden from watching it without Bonnie. And so and then all this amazing television started coming out. But I'm right with you, man. I enjoyed everything I'm seeing. Except for I love the character Froggy. I don't think he or Foggy Froggy.
But, Foggy.
Yeah. His execution is just short of it's the only weak spot I've seen so far.
I think he bothered me a lot in the first season. I think he does really good work in the second season as you unfold, and largely because they give him stuff to do beyond just be an idiot or a patsy or a comic relief, that he actually has the things he's going to work through. Daredevil season 2, like Game of Thrones, like House of Cards, it's a show that I'm sure there'll be a million people talking about why it's in decline or it hasn't done what it should. I can't not like a show that has, and I don't even want to mention the genre elements that it does so well for fear of spoiling anything for anyone, but just so confident in so many storytelling elements that I just have tremendous love for. And like, you know, it takes the Punisher seriously on a level that I don't feel any of the movie adaptations really got to, even though I've enjoyed some of the movie adaptations. It just is, it's so comic booky in the way that we've always wanted things to be comic booky, even more so than the MCU, where it's like these are great genre stories that they can tell with these familiar characters, and it's cool that they cross over. In episodic television done well with these characters, you need to just do a lot of really good comic book storytelling sort of elements to it. And this is a show that very much gets that right, just sort of weaving folks in and out and giving you these stories that you want and having just these great, 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 great moments.
I enjoy the fact that first episode that, you know, there's a good contrast because you had the first episode of Game of Thrones came on last week. Yep. And you know, and I still love that show. I love that show. I mean, that show could be, you know, just Tyrion reading, you know, the Dornan, you know, phone book. And I'd totally be into it. But it was an interesting scene with Daredevil. They're like, hey, you know, this is about Daredevil and Punisher. Yeah, we're going to get right into this really quickly. You know, we're going to get this quickly and we're going to set up. Like, I like where Foggy's going. I think Deborah Ann Woolls, her Karen Page, I really dug what they're going with her. Like I said, she's, you know, realizing her in her own way. She's not just the really hot girl that works in the law firm that creates sexual tension. She's got her past and her things she's dealing with. I think she's a really strong character. I was interested to see how does she try to handle things. When they cut to Foggy, how is he going to resolve stuff? So I like the fact that a weakness in a show is when they cut away to another character and you're like, can we get done with that so we can get back to the story? And I think the strength of a show is when you, any side character, you're absolutely eager to see what's going to happen with them.
Yeah. So.
Daredevil. And yeah, and the fact that now we're getting a Punisher spinoff, which I guess, spoiler, he doesn't die in this season, so.
There's certainly that in terms of the announcement. When it comes to binge watching, there's only so much you can protect from big gigantic spoilers. But I'm mega excited. I think it's gonna be great. I love what they're doing with Punisher, and they certainly give you all the toolkit for what a good Punisher should have in this series. I'm so pumped.
Gentlemen, we got some really cool stories people sent in, which we will address. We'll be using them later on. But if you send us your weird stories to Weird Things, we'd love to talk with them. So we thank you for the two ones we got, and we will try to do those. I think we'll lead with those next week. And please keep sending more of those. In the meantime, it's been weird.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.